Hola, this is a nice young lady reads to my eye, my nice young lady. Tonight's my is Sheena Gallen's Good Grim Hunting. Right now, chapter 11. Let's go. Ooh, this is all in italics. I think she's reading it from the grandfather's. No, wait, no. No, Stephen. Stephen has a journal. Stephen's reading it from his grandfather's journal. Okay. 19th of May, 1759. I hate leaving Margaret. Truly, 'tis the only thing I dislike about life at sea. I love the wind and the water and the storms and even the dead calm. I love the freedom of owning my own ship, making my own rules, answering to no one. I love seeing new places and tasting new food and buying exotic gifts. For Margaret, oh. My Maggie, how am I going to make it 6 months, mayhap more, without you? As much as I want to stay, I have to go. There are more adventures for me this life yet, and she knew as much when she married me. What a jerk. Why doesn't she go with them? Only, now with little Jamie, for that's what we call James Jr., she's not free to enjoy them with me. You know, that's partly his fault. So I'll sail the West Indies for both of us, all three of us. I'll buy her silk cloth for beautiful dresses, and spices for delicious food, and even rum for us to drink on cold London evenings. And I'll write in this set of 6 journals for both of us. That's convenient. Remember that there are 6 journals. This set Maggie gave me on the morning of our departure. And maybe, if I have a spot of the old Doubleday luck, Hale and I will stumble across a bit old treasure. I don't like that guy. He abandoned his family. Stephen closed the book and let out a loud curse. Fudge! Outside his library door, he heard something clatter and winced. He'd forgotten his housekeeper was about today. But, damn, how could he not curse? He had spent the afternoon reading the entire journal, and the first mention of treasure was on the very last page. That wasn't the treasure volume, was it, Westman? That was the Maggie volume. Westman turned the journal in his hands. This couldn't be his grandfather's only writings. He was a man who obviously felt the need to put his feelings on paper. Stephen now knew he was a man who loved his wife, loved his son, but who also loved his freedom. He'd led a fascinating life, and Stephen had no doubt he'd capture that fortune in gold doubloons. But where the bloody hell was the story about it? There had to be more journals. His grandfather had mentioned a set of 6. If this was the first, then there would be journals that came after. Yay! There would be 5, Stephen. There'd be 5 more journals. But bloody well where? He'd search every inch of his house. He and Josephine Hale had searched the entire attic, and this was it. The only journal. These writings, in a key that didn't seem to fit any lock, were their only clues. There had to be more, but where? Stephen ran a hand through his hair and tried to think about where else his grandfather's things might have ended up. He'd been sent to India 8 years before by his ailing father, the Jamie mentioned in the journal. His father had threatened to have Stephen kidnapped and transported against his will if he did not agree. Stephen was a disgrace to the family, a dissolute rake, who'd finally ruined one woman too many. And maybe his guilt over that last act forced him to acquiesce to his father's will. He left for India willingly. He'd been in India when his brother, James, had become the Earl. His mother's letters describing James' illness had been followed so closely by the news of James' death that Stephen had not even time to think of going home. Given the choice, Stephen would not have returned. It was not as though he were welcome. Bad blood. When he'd returned to claim the title that was now his mother, all her things, and all of his brother's things were gone from the house. Oh, sad. But was that all she had taken? He shook his head. His mother had nothing to do with this. Why would she take her father-in-law's possessions with her? She never even met the man. But his grandmother... Dot, dot, dot. The Dowager Countess, Margaret Doubleday. Stephen hadn't seen or spoken to the woman in years. He had heard that ever since her husband died, she'd been a recluse, preferring to spend the majority of her time in the country. At one time, she had been a belle of society, setting the fashion, attending every ball and theater, like you do. But something had happened, and she changed. By the time Stephen had reached a majority, she almost never came to London at all, anymore. His few memories of her were of a woman with haunted eyes, who constantly looked over her shoulder. He could hardly reconcile this portrait to what he read of her in the journals. And yet, if anyone knew something about James Doubleday, It was his grandmother. Where the hell was the old woman now, anyways? An hour later, Stephen was pacing his mother's drawing room, waiting for her to appear. She had a small house on Mount Street with large windows that gave her a good view of all that passed outside. He did not see her often. She had never forgiven him his youthful transgressions. In particular, she blamed him for losing the family fortune, though it had been her husband who decided to honor Stephen's vows. Vows. Lord Westman could have refused. It would have destroyed Stephen's honor, forced him to flee to the continent. But at that point, his parents would have been glad to see him gone. And they did see him gone. Stephen had hoped, upon returning from India, that his mother's attitude toward him had changed. He was the Earl now, and she had always favored his brother, the heir. But he'd been mistaken. It hadn't been the title she loved, but her firstborn, James. And no matter what he did, Stephen couldn't be James. Now Stephen paced the room a few more times. Refused a third offer of tea from Phillips, her agitated butler, and then almost pounced on his mother when she finally opened the door. She held up her hand when he went to kiss her cheek, and he had to settle for a formal bow. Oh, that's where he gets his coldness, his mother. Stephen. She nodded at him across her favorite chair, the one overlooking the street. This is an unexpected visit. To what do I owe the honor of your presence? Her hair was white and looked heavy in its chenille at the back of her head. Her face, always pale, was even paler now, with only the faintest color in the cheek. Her neck was long and regal, her hands small and delicate, her eyes brown and uninterested. Stephen pushed onward. Mother, I am sorry I have not called before now. He doesn't call his mother. Whore. I trust you are doing well. He sat opposite her on the green damask couch. She waved a hand. And if I die, would you really care? Of course. But you're not going to die. You're in excellent health. She gave him a piercing look and went back to her usual perusal of the street. There are other things that kill a person besides failing health. Shame, for one. Stephen looked down at his hands, feeling the sting of her censure. He had done all he could to save the family from social and financial ruin that he'd brought upon himself. He'd more than proved he was capable of the task, but she was never going to see that. He was not James, her eldest, her favorite. Actually, Mother, Stephen said, trying to keep the mood light, I've been thinking a bit about our family history myself. She hadn't been referring to the shame of that, he knew, but it was as good as opening as he was likely to have today. I was in the attic the other night. Whatever were you doing up there? Dallying with one of the maids, I suppose. Stephen clenched his hand on the chair's arm. No, Mother. She was a prostitute. I was going through some of the crates, and you will never believe what I found. She gave him a look that seemed to indicate he had failed to impress her before. Grandfather's journal, Stephen said, holding the book aloft for her to see. She blinked and went back to review the street. I was reading it today, Stephen said, as though she cared. And I found at the end the journal ended rather abruptly. I thought I might finish out the memoir, but I couldn't find any other journals. Do you know where they might be? With Grandmother, perhaps. His mother turned to him and gave him an icy stare. You have come to ask me about journals? In this time of crisis, you have come to ask me about journals? Stephen shifted in his chair. You are worthless! Worthless! She spat instead. Why did I ever waste my time with you? I should have killed you when you were born, you useless scamp. Goodness gracious! Who is this woman? Mother, I hardly think— No, you never did. That was the sole territory of your brother. You lie around all day and read journals. Do you realize our family is ruined? Do you realize we are all about to be evicted from our homes? Is that what you want? Do you want your mother living on the streets? She was screeching now, and Stephen had to fight to keep his own voice level. No, Mother, that is not what I want, and we are far from destitute. I am doing my best to restore our fortune. Your best. She sneered at him. What an oxymoron. She stood toward the doorway, and Stephen rose and went after her. Mother, all I want from you is Grandmother's address. At least give me that. Without pausing, she said, ask Phillips. In fact, from now on, if you have something to say to me, say it to him. I am certain he will relay the message. She opened the door, and Stephen closed his eyes when it slammed shut again. Sir. Sir, came a small voice from the corner with the tea tray. May I show you out? The Miss Phillips. Stephen rubbed the bridge of his nose. Yes, thank you. The stiff-necked man led him down the stairs and opened the door. Before Stephen could replace his hat, though, Phillips leaned close. The Dowager. Your grandmother? June raised his eyes to meet Phillips's. You know her address? 28 Swallow Street, my lord, just south of Hanover Square. The house is green and brown, my lord. Stephen nodded. Thank you. He replaced his beaver hat and turned to go. My lord, one more thing. Yes, Phillips. Her ladyship, sir, your grandmother, is not at home. We had a letter from her last week, and she won't be in town for another month or more. Your mother's eyes are weak, my lord, and I read the letter to her. Pardon me, my lord, but I thought you might like to know. In case you, he glanced behind him, needed the journal soon. What does this guy know all about this? Stephen smiled. Phillips wasn't half bad. Now if only the old butler could teach his mother some civility. Thank you, Phillips. Stephen pressed a crown into his palm. Let me know if you come across any other interesting information. He's got a spy in his house. Awesome. Yes, my lord, Phillips said, pocketing the 5 shillings and closing the door. It took you long enough, Stephen said, stepping out of the shadows between his house and the Hales. Josephine jumped and whipped to face him. You frighten me, she chided. He just watched her shimmy down the trellis in the tree outside her bedroom window. He was finally able to breathe again, and he didn't really care if she ever did so again. She'd scare him half to death, as usual. But he'd be damned if he'd let her know that. He wasn't the liberal egalitarian she seemed to want in her bed. Nor did he want to be. But he could at least spare them further arguments. If he kept his mouth shut and allowed her to think, he was somewhat unconventional. What are you doing out here? Waiting for you. He took her arm. I'm taking you on an adventure. Aw, that's sweet. Adventure? She gave him a curious look, but didn't resist as he led her to the front of the house, where he'd had a hack waiting for the last hour. He paused in the shadows, looking up and down the street. Again, he was reminded of the time in India. Felt dark eyes on his back, heard the hiss of whispered words. And yet he saw no one. He's having flashbacks to the war, isn't he? Still, he heard Josephine across the way and handed her into the carriage. He gave the jarvey the directions, then sat back and smiled at his companion. She was wearing an old shirt, trousers, and a coat tonight. Her red hair was pinned under a boy's cap. Anyone who saw them would think she was a lad, unless they came close enough to see the delicate cheekbones and the long, thick lashes of the sparkling green eyes. So what is on Swallow Street? She asked when they were underway. My grandmother's house. I read my father's journal today. There's a cry of protest from the other side of the carriage, and when I finished, I realized there must be other journals. You read the journal. Without me? So I went to my mother's house and asked her about them. As usual, she was singularly unhelpful, but another friend was kind enough to give me this tip. My grandmother is not at home, so we will have to sneak in. Your favorite pastime. He finally paused and looked at her. You read the journal without me. With a sigh, he extracted the book from his coat and handed it over. I was trying to save us time, not keep the book from you. Read it at your leisure, but start with the last entry. That is the one that mentions treasure. Really? Dipping her head, she began to thumb through the worn pages. Unfortunately, the date is May 1759. We need something a bit more recent, and I thought the most likely place for the rest of the journals to be kept was at my grandmother's house. Yes, She was angling the book, attempting to read in the weak light from the carriage lamps. Stephen realized there was no point in trying to speak to her now, so he leaned back and watched Piccadilly go by until they finally turned onto Swallow. Miss Hale, he murmured, when he saw the jarvey pass number 28. Put the journal away. We're almost there. He'd instructed the hack's driver to drop them farther down Swallow Street, almost to Oxford, so that none of his grandmother's neighbors would see a carriage stop before her empty house. This way, they could also find a back way inside. Stephen didn't expect any of his grandmother's servants to be about, not with a month or more before the old lady would arrive, but he intended to be cautious. Stephen had found that Josephine Hale could be quite reasonable. When he wanted her to do something, she wanted to do, and she followed him without comment through back alleys, over gates and fences, and finally to the back of his grandmother's house. He gave each of the windows a try, but they were all locked. He'd been expecting as much, so he pulled a crowbar he'd taken from his attic out of his great coat. You can't just hide a crowbar in your coat. I've tried. It doesn't work. Good lord. Josephine took a step back. What are you planning to do with that? Stephen gave her a grin and swung at the window. They're going to hear that. The crack of the glass was loud, and they both held their breath for several moments. A dog barked, and then all was silent. Using a hand inside the window to avoid wounding it on the shards of glass, Stephen turned the lock. He raised the window and looked at Josephine. She wasn't unconventional. Ladies first.
Mother, mother, can you hear me? I'm just calling to say hello. How's the weather? How's my father? Am I lonely? Heavens no. When you sent me off to see the world, were you scared that I might get hurt? Would I try a little tobacco? Would I keep on hiking up my skirt? Hungry, dirty, I'm losing my mind.